Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
What is a virtual exchange? Maybe not what you think. We'll be digging deeper into that in this special edition of Absolutely Intercultural, coming to you from Denmark. My name's Anne Fox, and this is show 232 of the podcast that tackles all things intercultural. Today's show is mainly about promoting dialogue between different groups of people. So, what is dialogue? And can you tell the difference between dialogue and, for example, debate?
And so, rather than establishing whether climate change is real and what is causing it, it's important to really try to uncover where does these different understandings of climate change actually come from. And that, for me, is like the true gold of cross-cultural learning and cross-cultural understanding. Not to just sort of hear what people think, but to really get to know, well, why does that person think so differently to me?
It's always nice to hear from previous contributors to the podcast, so we were delighted to hear from Dr. Kaula Odutola, based at the University of Florida, who we first heard from in 2012, talking about what binds Nigerians who've left their country. On November the 13th, Kaula will be streaming a live event exploring the question of whether there's such a thing as science that is specifically African. There is evidence to suggest that Africa does science differently and that the rest of the world could learn from this. And in keeping with the theme of this show, this will be a conversation and not a debate. The event, Science and the African Continent, will be shown live on Facebook and Zoom, and you can pick up the necessary links on our website at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. And that's also where you can leave us a comment about the show or an idea for future shows. So why not go absolutely scientific? We do talk a lot on Absolutely Intercultural about student exchanges, either going abroad to study or to work. Today I want to talk about a very different and new type of exchange, a virtual exchange that brings different types of mainly young people together to talk about important issues such as climate change and migration, and to find out what the differences and similarities are between them. But more important, perhaps, to try and understand the reasons for those different perspectives. The Erasmus Plus virtual exchange started this year and can be part of your studies, or you can join as an interested individual. You can also train to be one of the dialogue facilitators. The new Erasmus Plus exchange program is based on the success of the SALIA approach to promoting dialogue online. To find out more, I talked to Katja Rikkonen in Finland, who's been a key player in the launch of the Erasmus Plus virtual exchange earlier this year. Let's go absolutely virtual.
So SALIA started right after 9/11. And the two founders felt at the time that what was needed was a safe space for the young people in the world to discuss directly with each other what has happened and how do they feel about it. So how do they feel about what is going on in the world? So they set a space for those young people to connect directly with each other, to engage in dialogue without really any intermediaries. And for example, one of the things that the founders were concerned of was the media influence and the media's impact on how people viewed what was happening in the world that time. So they wanted to really create a safe space for participants to engage with each other, directly to hear from other peers in the world. How do they view the world? And I think this space is still really relevant in this digital age that we're living in, where we're really connected, but not necessarily connecting with each other. So the space, the need for the space is still there, even though 9/11 has happened quite a long time ago already.
So The idea sounds good at first sight, that you put people together who are very different in outlook and perception. But how does it all hang together? Because I know that if I put a load of people in a room together, they wouldn't necessarily talk across the divide.
Absolutely. And this is exactly what the SOLIA programs aim at, to help them to practice and learn that type of communication across difference. So, of course, we've designed different dialogue programs to do that. So we have high quality curriculums to ensure that there is a specific learning process that all the participants go through, and where they can exactly practice those skills that do not necessarily come automatically for people. And of course, we have trained facilitators for all those dialogue groups. So the groups are not on their own, but there is somebody who is trained to ensure that there is that type of constructive communication, safe space for that communication, and that there is that type of learning happening along the way.
I've been introduced to the SOLIA approach to facilitation. I've been training to be a facilitator. And the aspects that are sticking with me are that I have to be neutral. And that can be very difficult when you're talking about very hot button topics. But the litmus test that I was told was that by the end of the session, the participants should have no idea which side you're on. So I have to be neutral. I have to think about all the different points of view and make sure that they're covered, which you refer to as multi-partiality. So if a group is very agreed on a topic, then I have to try and think, well, what might somebody else say? What might another type of person think about this? And throw it in as a question. As a teacher, I find the next one really difficult. Do not teach. One thing that I really had to work at was the role of facts in SOLIA dialogue, and that you told me, I was told, facts are not important, and that was really difficult for me as a teacher to get my head around. But I finally understood that what you're trying to get to when you're facilitating a dialogue is trying to get at the reasons and feelings behind the perspectives that people take. So there is a place for correcting facts, but it's not in the dialogue. So have I got it right?
You have got it absolutely right. And I think all those different elements that you pointed out really speak to the facilitation and dialogue model that we have at the core of the learning in our dialogue programs. And being neutral is really hard, as you said. It's really not something that comes natural to us, especially on topics that we feel passionate about. So this is something that we'll focus in the training a lot, because it really is a learned response. So this is definitely something that all our facilitators have to practice and practice self-awareness as they facilitate. But it's important in the facilitation model, where we want to have the participants the opportunity to engage in conversations that might be difficult and might be triggering for them. There could be a lot of sort of heated conversations that really signals that what the participants talk about are important for them. But there needs to be somebody who is outside of that conversation, maintaining the safe space for that constructive communication. And if the facilitator is also participating, then there is really no one guaranteeing that the others have the safe space to express their emotions and thinking and even get to those difficult, maybe heated conversations. So that is definitely one of the important lessons that we practice in the training. But it is difficult even for more experienced facilitators to really maintain their neutrality when the group is talking about something that they really feel passionate about. You mentioned that the kind of you were puzzled in terms of, you know, why aren't facts important as a, you know, somebody with a teacher background? And this is something that we face very often. But maybe the kind of how the importance or role of facts is perceived in dialogue is important because it really illustrates how do we want the learning to unfold. So the kind of the goal of the dialogue is to go deeper and really try to explore and uncover where do those things that you can see immediately, which are positions and opinions, where do those come from? So that's really the core of dialogue. So why do people think the way they do? That's really the kind of the process that we try to help everybody to engage in. So what are the assumptions, beliefs, values, personal experiences that inform the different thinking and form the different participants in the group? And that's why facts are also interesting, because facts, I might argue, are important, but they're important in the sense that there might be different understandings of what is a fact. So, for example, there could be different understandings of climate change, whether climate change is real or what is causing climate change. And so rather than establishing whether climate change is real and what is causing it, it's important to really try to uncover where does these different understandings of climate change actually come from. And that for me is like the true gold of cross-cultural learning and cross-cultural understanding, not to just sort of hear what people think, but to really get to know, well, why does that person think so differently to me? What really sort of informs that thinking, and then, you know, carry that conversation despite those differences. So that's kind of exactly what we hope that everybody in the dialogue process will learn with us, and then can use that learning in every other setting where they're encountering people who think differently to them. So approach those differences with curiosity and intention of understanding rather than trying to maybe establish the facts or prove who is right and who is wrong.
I'm so glad you took that up, because that is one of the things that struck me the most during the training. It didn't sit well with me at the beginning, but I slowly began to realize what you were getting at. And you're not a voice in the desert on that, because there's a lot of research suggesting that people can't fight facts with facts. It has a lot to do with who's telling the facts and how trustworthy they are, and whether you feel part of the tribe of the person who's telling you certain facts. So I know there's a lot behind it, and it makes more sense now. So thank you very much for that.
No problem.
So can I move on to the Erasmus Virtual Exchange? So who's exchanging with who, and what are they talking about?
The Erasmus Plus Virtual Exchange is really a new initiative by the European Union. It started in this year, in 2018, and it's really the first commitment from the European Union to virtual exchange, and it's been renewed for next year. So it is really sort of testing different models for virtual exchange for this particular region. So there are actually a lot of different types of initiatives under the umbrella of Erasmus Plus Virtual Exchange. So there are dialogue programs, there are trainings, and there are sort of different types of opportunities for different types of participants. So opportunities for different educational institutions, civil society institutions, also for teachers. So it is a pretty sort of wide variety of participants that can take part in these activities and learn more, whether it's by taking part in a dialogue themselves or taking part in training that is related to virtual exchange.
So my experience so far is that the participants include students from universities, where the 10-week dialogue process counts as a module and is timetabled to take place during a normal semester. Can you say something about the topic of the dialogues and how you came to them?
This is interesting in the sense that there is no one topic for dialogue. So, of course, all the different dialogue programs differ in the theme and the framing that they have for the dialogue. So there is some variety in that. But for example, in Celia, we have different types of starting points for dialogue. So, for example, one of our programs talks about global and social challenges. So what are the biggest issues for young people in today's world? So we have something called semi-structured curriculum. So some of the readings and some of the topics are decided by us, by Celia, to ensure that there is some sort of common talking points for all the groups. And this is kind of, these are decided based on what really is significant and what participants in previous programs have brought up as something that they really want to talk about. But that's only a small part of the actual program. So majority of the program time, the topics are decided by the participants and by the groups. So the role of the facilitator in this is kind of facilitate the learning and facilitate the group to decide, well, what for us is the most important to talk about as this group? So what is the most fascinating, important, concerning topic that they feel like they'd like to use the dialogue time for? So partly it is, you know, decided by the framing of the program, but partly is really the learner-led process, what is important for each particular group.
Now, the program that I'm involved with includes refugees as participants, and one of the questions that I had was, how did the refugees sign up? Because for me, it's obvious, the university students, some of them even are forced to do it, so it's obligatory, it's not optional, but the refugees, I wondered, how are they recruited?
So one of the aims of virtual exchange is to really diversify these cross-cultural learning experiences, so not only to confine them in formal education institutions like universities, but to really include other young people who are not part of those institutions in part of the same learning process. So virtual exchange now also includes different types of civil society organizations, for example, language centers, different types of organizations, for example, that work with refugees. So it is not only those formal education institutions that benefit from this virtual exchange and their students then having these exchanges with other participants from education institutions, but really diversify to those people who might be marginalized in their societies or who might not have those same opportunities. So virtual exchange is really pushing to get that diversity even broader, so include more different types of ways for young people to connect with each other, even though they wouldn't be part of a university or formal school.
So virtual exchange, as its name implies, means that people meet where they are, but via computer. And I have been very impressed that Celia seems to have devised their own communication platform. It's not like anything I've ever used before, and I've used quite a variety.
I wanted to briefly touch on technology because for me that is very important part of virtual exchange. We have come to sort of think of these various tools for communication as tools, but for Celia and for virtual exchange, they're important in the sense because every single tool have some sort of parameters in how they work. So how do they exclude and include people? So one of the reasons why Celia has wanted to sort of really focus on this and do their own platform for dialogue is to create something that is as inclusive as possible. So to be able to incorporate participants also with low bandwidth or not necessarily access to very sort of sort of high-tech equipment or connections, so include as diverse a group of people as possible, and also to help them to engage in different ways. In our platform, you can, as you know, you can talk, so people can hear you, people can also see you, there is a webcam there, and there's also possibility to have conversation by typing. So there are these different sort of levels of communication to ensure that everybody's voice is heard and included in the dialogue process. So that technology piece is really important part of virtual exchange and how it really aims to be an inclusive learning experience for all.
And so you're turning on the head many of the things that I take for granted. And presumably this is what the platform that you've devised has exactly how it's been designed, so that it does enable video even in the very lowest bandwidth situation. So that's been a surprise for me.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of the goal of the platform, to ensure that those people, even with very low bandwidth, are able to be heard and also be seen in the group. And that's important. When you think of engaging with your peers around the world, it's very different just to rely on text-based communication as opposed to hearing each other's voices and accents and emotion in a voice, but also seeing the same thing via their webcam. So for me, sometimes what it's still surprising, even though I've done this work over 10 years, is that how do you get that feeling of groupness forming also in online platforms? So when you see each other and see each other's smile or body language or even the piece of their surroundings, that really helps you to connect with each other. So it's very important part of learning in a safe space and learning to communicate constructively, so that the communication is not asynchronous or it's not only text-based. I think we have examples of those type of communications in the digital age plenty around us. So what makes Celia different is exactly those things where you can connect with each other by using these different ways of communicating, and you get a little bit of a better picture of who's in the group with you when you do those engages in the platform.
One of the things that you have yet to develop is simultaneous translation. So can we talk about the language issue? Because mostly it tends to happen in English, and this must exclude some people, must include many people, I guess, but it is a pragmatic solution, isn't it?
Absolutely. And whereas I've been sort of emphasizing virtual exchange being inclusive, of course, there are ways the exchanges are set up that also do exclude, or they put people, participants, in different positions. So we're very aware of what are the sort of the inherent power imbalances in virtual exchange. So one is technology, as we've talked about. So there are still some people who do not have the capacity to join. They might not have any equipment, or their connection is so poor that it doesn't allow even joining the Celia platform. But a really important factor is language. So to be able to join the dialogue process, you need to speak English in a certain level to be understood by other participants, even though, of course, there are trained facilitators to help you to get your voice heard and understood in the group. But it is an important issue that is also discussed as dialogue groups, and acknowledged that there are plenty of different people whose native language isn't English. So there's different ways to express oneself, different accents that might impact understanding. So it is definitely part of the cross-cultural dialogue, and acknowledging that it's putting participants in different position when it comes to ability to express themselves and explain how they feel. So again, facilitators have a really important role to play to sort of ensure that those people whose maybe confidence in speaking English with, you know, new people around the world is not so great, that they are sort of gaining that confidence and comfort to really be part of that dialogue with their honest opinions. And of course, there is the ability, even though there's not that translation opportunity yet, there is sort of written form of the conversation. So facilitators type comments in the chat box in the middle of the room to ensure that there is at least some kind of reference point for everybody on the conversation they can go back to if they feel hesitant, whether they have understood everything correctly. And of course, we do encourage everybody to also voice that, hey, I am not sure if I understood you correctly. Can you repeat or can you explain more?
So if somebody is listening to this and thinking, I'd like to be a part of this, how would they go about it? I can see that you're looking for other universities to join in and make this part of their programs, but what about non-university people?
You don't have to be part of a institution or organization to get involved. Of course, we have also dialogue opportunities for individuals who are interested in taking part of. And of course, we have facilitation trainings that anybody who is interested can take.
And the next facilitator training starts on November the 11th, so you can sign up now. All the links are on our website at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. So, could a virtual exchange be a stepping stone to a face-to-face exchange? Or is it enough that taking part would help you to bridge the differences between you and people with very different perspectives? Thank you to all who joined us for today's show. Please check out our website at absolutelyintercultural.com, where you can get more information about this and previous episodes. And if you liked our show, please like us on Facebook too. By the way, did you know that we're also on iTunes? You can subscribe to us there for free and give us a rating and a comment. We would appreciate it. Our next show will be coming to you from Laurent Borgman in Australia on the 7th of December. Until then, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.